and then let them dry. Once they were dry, I collected larvae from the colony and placed them on the glass panes for 1 minute. I collected roughly 60 larvae from each instar and did 2 to 3 replicates of 20 to 30 larvae each. Once larvae had been on the containers for 1 minute, I placed them into a chamber, I placed them in a chamber with a food source, and then returned these chambers to the rearing cabinet for 24 hours, after which time I checked them for mortality. Mortality was usually very apparent, but if necessary, I gently probed the larvae to verify. This graph shows the effects of the increasing concentrations of permethrin on different larval stages of Phoenicia cerulovertis, the green blowfly. As I mentioned, I'm looking for the dose that's lethal to 50% of the population. And so you can see from this that first instars were definitely lower and higher susceptibility to permethrin than the second and third instars. At this point, I've also been able to test the third instar stage of Cynomyopsis cadaverina, and this graph again shows the effect of the increasing permethrin concentration. Again, I'm looking for that 50% mark, and I can find, using the graph, the concentration of permethrin that corresponds to it, which for this stage is roughly 0.05%. To test the adults, I again used the rearing chamber to maintain the adults and use the colony from there. I used state-of-the-art equipment to first inject various solutions into 4-gram vials and then roll them on a hot dog roller until they were dry. Once dry, I collected adults from the colonies and placed them into the vial, and then covered the vial with gauze and a cap that allowed for airflow, and then returned them to the cabinet for 24 hours, after which time I again checked for toxicity or mortality. This graph gives the effect of increasing permethrin concentrations on the Phoenicia cerulovertis adults. Again, I'm looking for that 50% mark, and I can come down and find the corresponding concentration of permethrin that causes 50% mortality. This chart gives a summary of the LD50 values that I found using these methods. As you can see, first, the Phoenicia cerulovertis adults were much more susceptible to permethrin than any of the other stages. Their LD50 value that I obtained for this was roughly 0.0025%. Likewise, there's a good difference between each of the larval instar stages of Phoenicia cerulovertis, with the first instar being 5 times more susceptible than the second and the third instars. Finally, you can see Cynomyopsis cadaverina third instar had a permethrin LD50 value of roughly 0.05%. These third instars had the same susceptibility as first instars of Phoenicia cerulovertis. One possible explanation of this is the fact that these are from different seasons, and so the Phoenicia cerulovertis being summer species, and the Cynomyopsis cadaverina being winter species, they have varying metabolic rates, which may differ or cause them to differ in their ability to metabolize the toxicants. So to conclude, I'd first obviously want to go on and do more toxicity testing. Obviously, I'm going to finish out the testing on Cynomyopsis cadaverina, the different stages, as well as looking at possibly a few other species. And I specifically am intrigued by this difference between the winter and the warm weather species, the warm and cold weather species, so I want to especially focus on that. And as I said, these were preliminary works that I am now going to use this LD50 value in developmental studies. And so now that I know the baseline toxicity of permethrin to Phoenicia cerulovertis especially, I can use that to treat sources on which to rear these different life stages of the species and see how permethrin will affect them. In line with entomotoxicology, I would also like to look at how if a method exists for analyzing larval samples for the presence of permethrin. So with that, I'd like to thank the undergraduate researchers that helped me in this, as well as Dr. Jim Olson of Texas A&M, who helped me in the development of this study and the University of Oklahoma for funding. Are there any questions? Yes. My vehicle? Okay, so she asked what the what I used to test the. My point here was to test contact toxicity, and so using the glass panes, I treated those so that they had permethrin on them, and then allowing the larvae to stay on them allowed them to pick up the permethrin, I'm assuming, right? So. Yes. For this study, I actually dissolved it in water. One of the committee members that I have is a chemistry professor, and this is what he suggested.
All right, I'm just talking about the embryonic juvenile hormone titers during the embryogenesis, and this is a strict, it's just only during the embryogenesis. And then the first part, I may confuse you a little bit, because I'm going to talk about the history of how I get that kind of experiments, okay? Briefly, I'm just talk about the review, the articles. First of all, unfortunately, this is first one is about the crickets, but I'm talking about the termites. But this is a good the literature review. And juvenile hormone turned on the cuticle formation in crickets. And when they just did it, they use a juvenile hormone as analog. And when they treat a specific the stage of the embryogenesis, they making the form the specific cuticle and during that specific stage. So they making deformed the orientation. And then the next one is the Formosan termites. At that time we published whenever the JH titer is increased and they have a threshold, and we published about that threshold. If they just maintained less than the 30 picograms per individual, they always stay same cast, like a walker, two walker, something like that. Okay, but if they just JH increased, and then the walkers, you know, differentiate into the soldier cast, that's a period, no question. And then is the Scharf, they just published the 2005. And when they have treated specific JH, and I mean the JH3, and turned on the specific gene in the reticulotomies, and they making the specific, you know, organs in during the embryo as a specific cast system, walker to free soldiers. Okay, so this is a basic literature review, and based on that is that we collected the primary reproductives. Primary reproductives means this is not the secondary reproductives. This is after they mating flight, and then they dropped, they lose the wings, they making female and male, and that is what we called primary reproductives. And so I collected between 2001 and through to 2005, for 5 years. And then this is kind of tricky. And first of all, is the 2001, we just collected, and then we measured the wet body, wet egg, the weight from the fertilized and unfertilized eggs. For unfertilized eggs, I got from the virgin females and virgin females put together, and they lay is unfertilized eggs. And then it's a male and females, as you know, they have a mate, and then they lay the fertilized eggs. Okay. And then we measured the JH titers as the fertilized and unfertilized. And then each sample have more than 100 eggs, sometimes 300, sometimes 500 eggs. It depends on which stage and when and where I can, you know, find. And then the death is, I'm just focused on the last one, the collection of embryo. And we just staged the six stages. Stage one, that is 1 to 2 days old, that is the embryo. And then the S2, stage two, that's 4 days old and 4 days old. And beyond, in stage six, that's 26 and 28 days old, is the embryo, oocyte, embryo, whatever. And because after 28 days in the lab condition, they hatch, okay? So that is the window. There's 28 days, there's from the first day to the end, and then they hatch, okay? And this is purely the unfertilized eggs, and fertilized eggs is the weight. And as we expected, the mated the fertilized eggs have a heavier, and but why? And then that is actually 2001 question. And then season finished because and then we cannot get any reproductives, so we just waited 2002. So based on this collection, I just measured the Jace titers, and on fertilized eggs, they have is about 20 picograms per egg, and this is a fertilized eggs, they have about 30 picograms per the egg. And then this is 2002, and based upon that is we just have a 7 days old after they just made it, this is a virgin, okay? After they just swarming, and I collected the virgin females and put it there. After 7 days, I collected the eggs and pulled, and then this is a mated. And after 7 days, the same thing, I just pulled for the samples. So each age groups have maybe it's a 200 pairs, or sometimes 300 pairs, sometimes 500 pairs, depends on. Because sometimes I just made 1,000 pairs for the one stage, because sometimes they just, without reason, they collapse. That's it. And then I don't have any samples. So that's why sometimes I have more eggs, but anyway, I just based on the Jace titers, a picogram per egg, and it showed similar patterns, up and down, right? This is a mated, as fertilized eggs, it's down and down and up, same thing. But the point is, the unfertilized eggs, they just have a maximum, they have a 30 picograms per egg, and then they drop, and they never beyond more than 30 picograms. But this mated, the fertilized eggs, they started like about 30 picograms and drop, and they're two times higher, and then they drop again, and they have a three times higher. And why? Okay. Maybe this one is cool. Hello. So, and then 2003 and 2004, at the time we found during the observation, there is some difference in morphological changes. And like a stage one, this is the 1 day old egg, very nice and then very dense and then very form, healthy one. And that is what we call the stage one. And then this is stage two. They making the germ line is making the dividing, and then they just making on the one side, all right? This is stage two. This is about the 6 days old. And this is the stage three. And they have a more germ line, and then they making the very dense, and then they making we cannot see here, but it's a real thing that you can see the vitellophage, it occurred from is there, and it just start moving to the dorsal side. Okay. This is a stage three. And then stage four, and this is after this stage four, that time is they've almost completed a dorsal closure. So because we can see the head area is a head is moved to and forming in the anterior part. And this is a stage five, and you can see a lot of the vitellophages occur from everywhere, and then head in anterior part in here. Okay, and then this is stage six, and this is and we cannot see this well. It developed the segmentation, but you can see all the legs and all the body. The segmentation is very clearly formed at the point. And then 28 days, about 27 days, what happened? They start hatching. All right, but still you can see sometimes the vitellophage is still occurring there. So based on that, we just are making it S1 through S6, and we just measure the Jace as a body weight, wet as the embryo weight. And the virgin case, this is interesting. This is they always virgin the unfertilized eggs. They always have a stage one and two. That's it. And then after we cannot see stage three, the embryo, because I think we assumed the primary reproductives, they just they realize something's wrong, so they just uptake and then they start lay eggs. So they get back to the stage one and two, and stage one and two, all right. And so that's why the body weight is a little bit higher than, is a fertilized stage one. But is the S1 through S6, they gradually increased, all right. But the Jace titer is a different story. And the virgin's case, Yeah, it's about 30 picograms all the time. But S1, they have it's 30 picograms, and then they just gradually decreased. And then, as I mentioned that, stage 4, they almost completed the dorsal phase, dorsal closure. Okay. At the time, maybe there is sometimes the embryonic CA formed at that time. All right. Then stage 5, they just dramatically increased, like 4 to 5 times. All right. And then they start dropping. So, as I mentioned that, the literal review and JH is very, very important to making forming specific cuticles during the embryogenesis. And this is the whole family, incipient colony, okay? So this is just the only incipient, not the mature colony. Incipient colony is different. And this is the first, second, third instars. Looks like a baby, you know, like a baby workers. And we just published 2004. At the time, they have a threshold, as I mentioned that. They just always maintain below is lower than 30 picograms per egg. Other than that, they go to the soldiers. But in that, this is never happened in mature cases. In incipient colonies, they have 45 or 50 days old, you know, the age colony, newly formed family, making the pre-soldiers, and after 10 days later, and making the soldier. So after 50 days, 1.5 month later, you can see soldier for guarding their family, all right? But it never happened in mature, you know, colonies. So the summary of this talk, the JH increase of embryos after dorsal closure coincide between Formosan termites and crickets. I just put in the some kind of assumption. And then JH, juvenile hormone from the maternal JH, might be used as a signal to initiate development for embryo CA. So as I mentioned, as a conclusion, I just made a typology during the embryogenesis. And the maternal JH actually involved in stage 1, 2, 3, barely 4. So maternal JH is responsible for making the embryonic CA, and then this is making there is produced incipient JH, and then this JH is responsible for JH stage 5 and 6, and then making more advanced, and it's like embryonic the organs and tissues, and then they eventually emerge and into the first instar of larva. Okay, so this is my talk, and any questions and comments?
How did you measure the titers of JH?
Long story, but we just pull the eggs, and then we just use internal standards, and then homogenized. And then we use our GC mass and for the quantification. And so. Yes, sir.
In 1964, we have discovered with Professor Williams of Harvard that tiny amounts of juvenile hormone given to the embryonic development will cause oocidal effect. The ready for later found this is at the period of blastocinesis, so that the presence of juvenile hormone at the embryo was absolutely fatal. Now, how can you explain your with this?
That's why I just put the typology of the JH. So I'm going to talk about that as an after talk. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Given that JH can be bound to the telogen, do you think and preserve that way? Do you think that basically it's sequestration from the carbon that really
is very possible. But after the hurricane, I didn't have any time to continue that. Subject, so yeah. But if I have time, if I have a chance to do so, maybe. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
My research works with doing stream assessments in southern Alabama, and today we're going to focus on the metals and the community structure. So yes, Alabama does have a coast. We're down on the Gulf Coast. And our work is going to be right, that's highlighted there in red. We're just going to focus on streams that flow into the Mobile Tensaw Delta, which is just north of Mobile Bay. There we go. And all of our streams are right in this area. We have streams that are flowing in on both sides of the delta. So there's two questions I'm going to